From the Altoa Marine Corps Air Station in Santa Ana, California, this is Marine Gunnery Sergeant Bob Vandywalker interviewing Lance Corporal Donald Pontius, serial number 230-5637, MOS 0311. Don, what's your unit here at El Toro?
I'm with HAMS 37 right now, S1 office.
Okay, to start things off, Corporal Pontius, would you tell me when you arrived in Vietnam, what the date was, where you went, what organization you were hooked up with, and from there, tell me about your tour in Vietnam, as much as you can remember, involving dates, if you remember, and operations, and people, as much as you can remember, okay?
All right, well, we left Camp Penn on approximately the 13th of March. I got to Nam about the 16th, and I stayed in Da Nang for 2 days. Then I got a hop on a C-130 down to Chu Lai, and from Chu Lai, I stayed in their transit for about, I think, 2 days, and then I went to Bravo Company 1-5, I went to 1-5's area, which was on Hill 54, right before you get to Tam Kỳ. And I stayed in the transit for approximately 2 weeks, and I went to Bravo Company 1-5 Second Platoon. And we stayed on Hill 54 from March until approximately the last part of April. I think on April 22nd we left to go on to Tam Kỳ to pull Operation Union 1 and 2. My CO at the time was Captain Peters, and my lieutenant, my platoon commander was Lieutenant M.O. Fletcher, and my platoon sergeant was Sergeant Apple. We went on we left Tam Kỳ to go on Union 1, and we were more or less a blocking force. Then on Union 1 consisted, I think, from around April 22nd until about either the 1st of June, and then either the 1st of June or the last part of March, I mean May, I'm not sure. And then we pulled Union 1 and Union 2, which was from either the last part of May, first part of June, until around July 15th. And after we pulled Union 1 and 2, we went to the Quezon Valley. Well, this is where we were going in the first place. We just pulled the operation as we went. And we went to the Quezon Valley to set up on Hill 51. Which was, we were outside of, I guess, the general head, the headquarters for the Arvin compound around there. I guess we were maybe 2-3 clicks away, maybe a little longer. But we set out in the Quezon Valley. There was nothing there. I mean, it was just, all the people were there, but the NVA and the VC were pretty thick at the time, and they were scaring them all off, and they wouldn't run the rice paddies or anything else. They were just, well, they lived in around the Arvin compound. They were pretty much terrified of all the VC down there and the NVA. And at this time, we lost Sergeant Apple. He got hit. He got wounded, and he went to a CAC unit. And prior to this, we lost Lieutenant Fletcher also.
Can you explain what happens in the case? Were you with the sergeant and lieutenant when they got hit?
Yes, I was.
Can you tell that particular day, if you remember, what happened to cause all this?
Well, the sergeant, Sergeant Apple, it was kind of, well, it was partially his fault in a way, but he shot an M79 at a booby trap, and it went off, and it got him in the hand, which a shrapnel got him in the wrist. And Lieutenant Fletcher, we were on a company sweep at the time. We were in the Quezon Valley. We hadn't been there no more than, I guess, a week or so. And Staff Sergeant Prue took over Sergeant Apple's position, and we were on a company sweep through the Quezon Valley. It was across the ridgeline of where we had set up our TO. And we were walking flank, my squad was. There was 8 men, I believe. And there was a POC Weir, he was walking point, and I was about the third or fourth man back. I guess I was the second fire team leader at the time, and the man on my fire team was POC Denny Twill. He was an 0141. And we were walking on the, as I said, we walk in flank. We walk in the left flank for the right flank for the column, for the main column, and we set up on a little tree line on the rice paddy dike. And there's about 400 meters of paddy in front of us. And as we set in, I was on the very outside. And we started getting some sniper fire from the it was like a small mountain range to the left of the paddy, or to the right of the paddy, I mean, from where we were located. And they started firing at us, and they hit our gunner, our machine gunner. He's a POC at the time. Reeves, he shot him in the back of the boot, in the heel. It didn't hit him in the foot or anything. But he jumped behind his gun, and he started firing. And the first fire team leader, the POC Bill Jarrett. Well, he said that he had seen him. He saw the VC, and he started firing at him. He was shot in the back and knocked him into the paddy. And he started yelling he was hit, and he was hit. And so as I was the only man, well, the man in my fire team, Denny Twill and myself, were the only two that weren't pinned down at the moment. We ran over. I ran over and pulled Jarrett out of the paddy, and Twill went to get a corpsman since we didn't have one with us. And we kept on yelling for help because there's only eight of us, and we didn't know approximately how many VC there were, but there was rounds flying everywhere. And I lay behind a tree with Jarrett, and he was shot twice. He got shot once in the back and once in the forearm. And I laid there, he started going into shock, and I did as much as I could for him. And then our lieutenant came running down there, and a Sergeant Schaefer, which was our platoon sergeant at the time. They both came down there. I told Sergeant Schaefer not to get in the position where he was going to, where Jarrett had just been shot, because the VC had it pinned down pretty heavily. Well, he jumped down there anyhow, and he got shot in the wrist. No, he got shot in the forearm and in the thumb. Well, he went back, and the radio man at the time was POC Bill Johnson. He took care of Sergeant Schaefer. Our lieutenant came down there because he figured his place was with the men. And I also told him not to stay back, not to get down by this tree line, because they had myself and Jarrett, they had us pinned behind a tree. And there was a POC, Jimmy Davis. He was down there with us. He was putting out a base of fire for myself because of I had my difficulty with my rifle. My rifle had jammed, and so had Jarrett's. But the lieutenant, he didn't listen. He thought that maybe he had a possible chance of getting down there and drawing a fire away from Jarrett and myself. But when he jumped down behind a tree, he was hit above the shoulder, and it just it laid his shoulder wide open, and the bullet followed the bone all the way down to his wrist. And as I said before, Davis was putting on a base of fire for us, and I crawled across and took care of Lieutenant Fletcher as best I could. And I crawled back and forth across here two or three times, I guess. And then we finally got a corpsman to get over to us. He worked his way around. It was a corpsman. His name was Eddie Ray. He was had been in Nam approximately 8 days. It was his first operation, or his first company sweep he had ever been on. And for being as green as he was, he did an outstanding job. And we had a POC, Sanson, came from behind the rocks to come down to see if he could give us a little support too. And he was shot above the knee, and it knocked him down. And the bullet followed his the bone also, and came out right above the top of his boot. And I crawled back and put a battle dressing on his leg as best I could. And he kept his cools. He really did. He didn't go into shock as a lieutenant. Our Jarrett seemed to started going into, and he helped the corpsman and myself with the medevac slips. And after this, while we had starting it up, reinforcements, Corporal Deadman came down. He fired a law into the approximate VC position, and we called Arty Strike in on him. And after about, I guess, maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes of a heavy firefight, it subsided, and we made a recon of the area, and we found one VC, and we found, I think it was 12 or 15 bodies we found. We found a lot of ammo, but no weapons, and we found one VC woman, and our VCS suspect, and we found a VCS old man, but they were in the area at the time, and there was fire coming from their hooch. And Lieutenant, he was medevaced out, and Jarrett and Sanson and Sergeant Schaefer, all four of them were medevaced out. And the Lance Corporal Peters got, PFC Peters got hit at the time also, and he was medevaced. And we also lost our skipper for the second time. It was a We had lost Captain Peters approximately maybe 3 hours or 4 hours before. He got shot he got shot in the legs, right below the knees. And then we had a lieutenant, I can't remember his name right off, but he was an FO for Arty Battery, for Delta Battery, that was with us at the time, 211 I believe they were. And he took over as a CO for, he had the, I think he had most time in grade, I'm not sure, but he was shot above both legs and he had to be medevaced out. He didn't want to leave, but they made him get medevaced. And then Lieutenant Hansen took over the company, and we went back to to our base camp, which is on Hill 51, excuse me. And Lieutenant Fletcher was taken out of country. As far as I know, he was in Japan. Then he went to Great Lakes, and the last I saw, he was in Bethesda Naval Hospital in Maryland.
Do you have any idea how big a group hit you down there that day?
We figure between 25 and 35 VC, because there was a lot of ammo around there. I mean, there was just all kinds. It was 7.62, and there was, there was Chinese communists and everything else up there. Had a few, we found a few Chi-Com grenades.
But your point man or the man out in front didn't know really what hit?
No, we were, as I said, we sat in more or less to wait for the column. The main column had halted for the time being, and we just sat on the tree line because it was, we didn't want to cross the big paddy and be out in the open in case there was something set up for us. And I guess the VC kind of blew their cools, kind of got over-anxious, and figured they could take on eight men a lot easier than they could approximately, 50 or 60 men. And which I'm kind of glad in a way that they did hit us, because, like I said, the paddy was approximately 400 something meters long. If they could have got the whole company out there, they could have took more casualties. We could have took more casualties than we really did.
Did you ever go back in there again?
Yes, we pulled three or four company sweeps through there, and we pulled an operation through there.
But any amount of number of men you ever get as far as NVA or VC?
No, not until we pulled one op through the area. At the time, it was Operation Calhoun was approximately in the same area. And going up, though, we went up a mountain that was 953, is what we called it, because that was the approximate altitude of it. And, we went up the mountain, and it took us we took our time. It took us 2 days, and Captain Reese is our CO at the time. Lieutenant Brad Keene was our company commander, was our platoon commander, and we had a... Sergeant Smith was our platoon. Was a right guide, And we, like I said, we took our time going up. It took us approximately 2 days to go up, and we came back down in approximately an hour and a half. And as we came down, we ran into a VC force, or an NVA force of approximately, 15 men. And they were carrying they had a pig on a spigot, which it looked like they either were going to barbecue or were in the process when they saw us. But they started running as they saw us, and we accounted for 2 kills, and we estimate we hit approximately 3 more. We found a lot of blood, a lot of trails, but we couldn't find anything else. But we did have 2 confirmed, because they were laying in the paddy. One was still living and told us why they hadn't fired back or didn't try to set an ambush up for us, because they were low on ammunition and they were pretty hungry. They just wanted to get in and get out of the area. And while we were on the Calhoun, it was more or less a search and destroy. We were killing food surplus for the VC and trying to find us. We found a hospital. Alpha Company 1-5 found the hospital, and they captured a doctor and 2 NVA nurses. And we found a rest area, which looked to be a rest area. They had beds and things like this up in a hooch. It was on approximately 848 meters up the mountain. And as we came down, though, like I say, we hit them. And then we set in an ambush that night. We didn't have any more conflict, but we started going in the next morning back in Hill 50, 51, and we hit, while we were, the point man at the time was Lance Corporal King, Bob King, and he was, my squad was walking point again, as my platoon usually walk point. Our squad, we used to take turns walking point, but it was King was walking point, and we saw a force of it was approximately 5 VC. We thought they were VC, and they were pushing an old man around. They were slapping around and things, and so King shot the first man. He dropped, and the other 4 took off running, and they held up in a little tree in a trench line, more or less, and well, 2 must have got scared and took off running, and we dropped both of them. PFC Haley and Lance Corporal King shot both of these, and they were both dead outright. And then we captured 1, and 1 got away. But the one we captured, he kept on saying he was a VC, a Vietnamese former that the VC made him fight for him. And come to find out later, he was interrogated by a scout, and a Kid Carson scout. And come to find out later, he was it was an NVA mortar platoon or mortar squad, and he was the commanding officer of the mortar platoon. But we had never found any more of his platoon except for these 5 men, as I said, which was we killed 3 and one had escaped. But we stayed in the area for approximately 2 more days, and nothing else turned up, so we went back to Hill 51.
Then what did you do then? You stayed back there for a little while and stuff?
We stayed there, I guess. Well, we almost stayed back about 3 or 4 days. We went back out on a company sweep. We pulled approximately a company sweep a week. We went out for approximately 3 or 4 days, came back for 2, then went out again. The whole company did that. They used to rotate them off. Alpha, Charlie, Bravo, and Delta Company would go out like this.
Corporal Pontius, what about replacements now? How did these affect your unit as replacements came in?
Well, most of the time when we got replacements, we had my platoon itself, we were real tight. It was a real tight platoon. And as I said, replacements came in, they were taken in, and we treated them just like we would treat anybody else, just like we treat one another. And our replacements seemed to get along real well. we only had two incidences where the men didn't shape up as we had expected. Well, they didn't shape up as the Corps would have expected, and they were taken care of.
In other words, you feel like they just fit right into the outfit?
Oh yes, they did, because as I said, we took them in like they were had been there. We tried to help them, because when I first got to Vietnam, I had two of the men had been there a little longer than I had, which it always seems to be. They take you under their wing and show you all the ropes and everything to do. And that was the one that took me in was it was PFC King at the time, Bob King, the one I had mentioned earlier, and Marvin Askins. He was a Lance Corporal. We used to call him Chief all the time, for his father was the chief of the Navajo tribe in Albuquerque. But they took me in and showed me all the ropes, and we just kind of, my platoon took this on themselves. They took the guys in, the men in, and they showed them what to do, what not to do, who to trust, who not to trust, and things like this. They just more or less showed them all the ropes of the field. And then as they progressed, as new men come in, they took over the same job. But we were really we had a real tight platoon.
Do you feel the 5th Marines are a pretty good outfit?
I believe they are, yes. You know, I might be kind of biased because, like I said, I was with 1-5 for an awful, well, from October, or from March of 67 until October of 67. Then I went to headquarters company.
What was the last operation you were on with the 5th Marines?
I was on Operation Swift with the 5th Marines, yes. And we went to, that was the last operation we, in fact, it was the last operation we pulled in the Quezon Valley.
That wasn't the one you just told me about, though.
Oh, no, that was Operation Calhoun I told you about.
All right, how about Operation Swift, then? You know, it appears that that Quezon Valley became a nemesis to 5th Marines, though, didn't it?
Oh, yes, because we definitely put a hurt to Ho Chi Minh's boys down there, because every time we went out, we always came back with at least 2 or 3 kills or more. And like on Operation Cochise, we killed a whole, I believe it was a company or 2 platoons, I'm not sure which, of NVA Hardcore. They had the uniforms and everything. And it was during in the mountains. We were walking along a ridgeline, and they were like in the small valley, and they were sitting down. I guess they were either blowing pot or something, because they were awful high. When they just started coming, when we started open the ambush up on them, it was just like shooting ducks in a shooting fish in a barrel, because they were just all uncoordinated and everything else, and some just came running at you with nothing. And we stayed there for I think two days. And we got all the ammunition they had and all the gear they had. We collected, I don't know how many AK-47s they had brand new AK-47s. All the gear they had was almost in perfect condition. And then, as I said, then we hurt Ho Chi Minh's boys very much in the area, and they were out to get us. And they finally, they put a pretty bad hurt on us on Operation Swift. We took a lot of casualties, but they did too. They took, we had body count, I think it was between 1,000 and 1,500 NVA Hardcore. That was body count. Now, we don't know how many more we had killed or anything else, but from what we could count, from what was laying in the area, there was we definitely put a hurt on them. And considering the size of the outfit that hit us, it was we were lucky that we made out as well as we did. We didn't take more casualties than we really took, because we approximately figured we got hit by 2 reinforced regiments of NVA Hardcore. And what had happened is Delta Company 1-5 went out. They had an OP out, and the NVA ambushed the OP and took their radio. Then they called Delta Company out. Now, how they got Delta Company's band. I'm not sure how they got the call sign is beyond me, or beyond anybody else in the outfit as far as I know. But they called Delta Company out, and Delta Company went out and were hit in an ambush, and they lost, they took heavy casualties, and then Delta Company called us out, and they called Huey airships in, and they called airstrikes in, and Artie strikes to get the VC off of us. And as I said, we came out, and then we were hit by the NVA, and we took heavy casualties, but they did too. I guess percentage-wise, we killed approximately 6 or 7 to 1 that we took. And then we called different outfits in. We called Delta Company 1-1 in, and I believe 1-7 was called in, a company from 1-7. And I think my company 3-7 was called in. And then we had 3-5 and 2-5 were both out there on the operation. And it consisted from September 5th until September 15th is how long the operation lasted. But we were pulled out. Bravo Company itself, Bravo and Delta were both pulled out, I think around the 9th or the 10th. I'm not sure which, though. I can't really remember. It must have been around the 10th or the 11th because we got hit the 6th and the 8th real bad.
Well, what happened that night down there when you guys got hit and another outfit came in to help you? They got hit also?
Yes, that was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was 3-5 that came in, and they got hit real bad too. They just were mortaring everybody down there, and they mortared us on and off, on and off, on and off, and then they mortared 3-5, and 3-5 was taking pretty, they were taking casualties too. But it seemed like they really had it in for the 5th Marines in a hole because, as I said, we were definitely putting a hurt to Ho Chi Minh's boys in the area. And we lost our CO. It was it was Captain J.C. Reeves. And we lost our platoon commander. Lieutenant Brad King got his finger shot off. And we were taking, like I said, we were taking casualties left and right. We took, approximately 36 men, and we came back with approximately 12 or 13. And most of the guys that got hit, well, there's, I think, only 3 or 4 that really came back to the outfit until I left in October. The rest, they had either gone on home or else they were in Japan for a pretty good length of time. But we, as I say, we took a lot of casualties, but there was a lot of heroic deeds that were pulled off during Operation Swift, that men that were, we were outnumbered and everything else, and it just didn't seem, well, it seemed at the time that we had no choice, we had no chance of making it, that they were just gonna completely overrun us, which they almost did once, and we had to pull back and set up a smaller perimeter, but we held them off. And there was men that were dying out there, but they died the way that a man should die. They died a heroic death because we had one who was a Lance Corporal Mitchell. He ran out and pulled a machine gun out of a bunker, which the NVA were firing at us, and he pulled it right out of the Gook's hands. And he grenaded them and killed them both and brought the gun back and went out again, and he was hit and he was killed instantly. And we had I don't really know, but there was just so much stuff that was happening at one time, you really couldn't tell. But that especially, that hurt a lot of guys in the company, cause in my platoon, because we had known Mitch for an awful long time. We had come from Chulai together and pulled a lot of ops together. And then when he got it, when everybody was getting it, it kind of, I don't know. It kind of bothered you more than it really would have in any other circumstances. But it just seemed like we didn't have a chance. And then when we got to the attitude that, well, the hell with it. You know, they're going to take us. We might as well take as many of them as we can. And we did. And we, like I said, we made it out. The Huey gunships were always pulling sweeps down upon them, upon the NVA, and then we were holding them off as much as we could. And then I guess finally they decided it wasn't worth it, that they were just getting their ass beat too bad, and they left. They finally pulled back. And then we went in about the 8th or the 9th. No, it must have been about the 9th or the 10th, we were pulled back out of the field, and then Delta Company won one, and remaining companies stayed out. I think Charlie Company and Alpha Company 1-5 also stayed out, and then we went on back to the CP. But Lieutenant Colonel Hillgardner was our battalion CO at the time, and he did a magnificent job. He was hit, I believe, once or twice, and we had a chaplain by the name of Capodanus, and it was he was killed on the operation, but he had been hit approximately 2 days before, I believe, before he got killed, and he was giving the last rites to a Marine that was hit in the chest and wasn't expected to live at all, and they ordered him to be medevaced out. They almost gave him a direct order to be medevaced out, and he told him he wasn't leaving because he wanted to stay with his grunts, that they needed him more now than they ever did before in all the time he had been with 1-5, and he would not leave the field. They couldn't make him leave the field, and as I say, he was killed, given last rites to a Marine. The irony of the whole thing was, though, that even though Captain Capodanus did die, the Marine that he was given the last rites to lived. And as far as I know, he's still living. But I don't know what man it was or from what company he was from.
Corporal Pontius, then what happened? And you went back again to...
We went back to the area. We went back to the battalion CP, which was Hill 51. And, we waited until the operation was over. Then we started building the hill up for the Army was going to take over. I believe it was a 12 cav that came out there to take over the Quezon Valley from us. And we went to Hoi An, which was right outside of Da Nang. I think it's approximately 35 miles outside of Da Nang itself. And we pulled, then, as I said, I was taken out of the field. I was given a profile and was sent to headquarters company. But 1-5 still stayed in Hoi An. Then they went from Hoi An, they went to Phulak. And from Phulak, they went into Operation Way, which they did an outstanding job. Which I kept in touch with a lot of the guys that were on 1-5 because, as I said, we were real tight. And they did an outstanding job all the way from after we left Hoi An until they went until Operation Way. And then I came home in April. April 1st, I left Da Nang to come home. I got home about the 5th. I got into to Norton Air Force Base the 5th of April. And most of the guys that I had known in the company are real tight with either had gone back to, or either were in Okinawa, they had three hearts, or they were out of the field because of, they had two or more hearts, or two 48-hour ones, or something like that, and I kind of lost contact with the guys in 1-5.
What was the profile on your eyes, or what?
Yes, it was on my eyes. I had a crossed eye when I was born, and it kept on bothering me and things like that, and because of the heat and the sun being so bright, it caused my eye to go crossed again. And the funny part about it was, I couldn't see at night. And the guys used to always kid me about it because they used to leave me around like I was blind. And a POC, Johnson, George Johnson, he was a rocket man. He used to leave me around like I was a blind kid because I used to hold him to the back of his pack and everything else. It was really kind of, like I said, it was kind of funny. But I never got hurt or anything when I was in the... at night, which was kind of funny too, because I used to fall a lot and make a lot of noise, which was kind of bad. If we ever got hit, I'd feel it was kind of partially my fault. But there was a doctor. He told me my eyes, all I would need was vitamins. And so he gave me vitamins for my eyes. And about two nights later, I was taking these vitamins, and I fell in a 6x4 hole. Almost broke my goddamn neck, you know. I figured I told him to take his vitamins about 2 days later, and it's because they weren't doing me any good. And I was sent to Da Nang to get another pair of glasses made. Then I was, like I said, I was finally sent out of the field in October, and I was sent to headquarters company with a profile.
Is there anything that you might add if you were instructing any troops to go to Vietnam as far as things that you've learned over there that might want to pass, that you would pass on to troops?
Yes. If I was instructing, I think I'd tell them, basically about three or four things. One is not to trust the Vietnamese people, no matter who they are, no matter if it's, there's only one that we had ever trusted. Myself and my platoon, it was in the Quezon Valley. This kid's name, his name was Mott, and he was going to be the honcho of the Quezon Valley after the old honcho would pass away. And he was really an intelligent kid, and we used to see him a lot and used to talk to him and things like that. He used to tell us where the VC were or if they had been around or anything like that. But the Vietnamese people in the whole, I tell them not to keep what they know to themselves and not to trust any of them, because you don't know who's who. You don't know if they're NVA, VC, or what, or if they're on your side or anything else. And I tell them about to look out for one another, which is, everybody knows that just about, but sometimes they might forget it. If one of your buddies get hit and you can get to him, make your best possible effort to get to him, because if you were in the same position and he was in your position, he would probably do the same thing for you. And about the weather over there, that it is very hot and very humid in the summertime, but yet it gets very cold in the winter, and to make sure to take their field jacket and things like this over there, and to try to keep your feet dry as much as possible. I know it's awful hard being a grunt, because you're always walking through paddies and things like this. But if you can, because immersion foot is really bad, because I had it, and I know it will definitely make your feet in a condition you definitely don't want them to be in, because you can't hardly walk or anything else. And as I said, it gets hot in the summertime. Be sure to take your salt tablets, because heat exhaustion and heat stroke is very common in Vietnam, and especially to take their malaria tablets, because malaria can be a very factor in your men and in the performance that you pull off, because if you're coming down with it and you don't know what it is, you definitely wish you were in somebody else's shoes, because it makes you wish, makes you want to feel like you were dead. Because we had a lot of guys in 1-5 that had caught malaria. In fact, I had the symptoms myself. I had it on Nui Lak San. We were climbing a mountain, and I came down with it. I guess it had been in my system, because I didn't really get a bad case of it. I had it for about 2 or 3 days. Just the symptoms that come on and off. I had the diarrhea and the vomiting and the dizziness and the fever and everything else, but it subsided, but it comes back once in a while. And the doc told me it probably will, but I didn't have it, what you call a bad case of it. I just had the symptoms of it. And I don't ever want to get it again, but I'm glad I never had a real bad case of it like a few guys in 1-5 did, because you lose a lot of weight. Lose everything you have over there. And another thing too is on the letters and stuff that the guys get over there. I know I kept a lot of them too from your girl and things like this, but your best bet is to get rid of them after you read them, to burn them or destroy them, and don't leave anything behind when you pull out, because everything you leave behind, the VC or the NVA will pick up and use against you, because it would be kind of, it would definitely kind of make you feel kind of funny if you left the 25 rounds of machine gun ammo laying behind back on a trail, and your best friend gets shot with a 7.62 millimeter round, and you just wondered, well, man, was that the one I left back there or what? I know you hump a lot of gear in Vietnam. Sometimes you hump more than you really think you ought to, but it all comes in handy when you get hit, and if you get hit bad. Because if they can't get a resupply into you right away, everything you got is going to definitely come into use. And, well, like I said, that's about all I can really think of, except for stuff about your clothing and stuff like this. You know, try to, in the summertime, keep your pants legs rolled up. Keep your trouser legs rolled up, I should say, to keep circulation a little better. Keep the heat rash down, because that's it's not a real big factor, but it definitely can put a hurt to your body, make you itch and everything else. And it, as far as leeches go, we ran into a few of them too. But if you got your trousers, if you've got your trousers bloused, if you got them rolled up, if they're gonna get on you. They're gonna get on you. There ain't no way about it, because they'll go through the your boot laces and everything else, the eyes of your boots and everything else. But I guess that's about all I could tell them to really watch out for. Except for, maybe booby traps and stuff like this. You know, to stay on the trails, because if you walk off, possible chance you might have been about the last step you might ever take. Because the VC use the same trails that you do on the rice paddy dikes and things like this. And if you stay on them, you'll two out of three chances you'll be in the clear. And look out for punch. Well, you can tell most Viet Cong or NVA are booby traps that are set up, because they've got a mark for to tell their own men where they're at. And well, we were all instructed in that before we went down south. But you get a lot of classes down there on booby traps and things like this, and ambushes, the kind that they'll pull off on you and everything. And it really helps, because the guy that gets down there, he's scared anyhow. And if he's not, there's something wrong with you. And if they try to explain things to you a little better, and then you've got your buddies around you that they try to help you out as much as possible, it really is a great help, because there's just so much you can learn in the States. Then you go over to NAM, it's like OJT, because you get on-the-job training over there, and if you make a mistake, well, it might be your last one. So you're like back here in the States, like I was in ITR and BIS, well, we took everything seriously, but yet not as seriously as we should have. When you get down there, you know that all the instructors that you had back here were teaching you and trying to emphasize upon you the most important things that they had got out of the NAM, and that they did the best job that they could. And over there, you just put everything that you were taught into common use, and if you do this two out of three times, you have no problem. Well, you have problems, but you don't have as much as if you didn't pay any attention whatsoever and thought you knew it all.
Thank you very much, Corporal Pontius, and this is Marine Gunnery Sergeant Bob Vandy Walker from the Altoa Marine Corps Air Station with an oral history tape program with Lance Corporal Donnelly Pontius.